up, everybody? Late Saturday night, AEW Full Gear just went off the air. Do you ever think we were going to have Eddie Kingston on the front of a pay-per-view banner? Love it. Love it. Love it. Yes, I'm a little bit, biased from New York, getting to enjoy his work for 15 years. And as I told everybody yesterday, did you see those goofs online? I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable with this barbed wire. I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable. Man, people out there, they need the giant-sized nipple to shut them up. I mean, what fucking world do we live in that people get there? I mean, it's funny because on Halloween, they'll talk about how they're watching like double R-rated gory horror films, and they'll talk about all this other stuff, and then when you see... And then a little barbed wire, a little bit of thumbtacks. Hey, I'm feeling uncomfortable right now. That's what I have to say to that. Anyway, I want to welcome everybody tonight to your AEW Full Gear pay-per-view recap. As I've been saying for a few weeks now, to me, in my opinion, the best stacked card that they have had to date in their existence. Now look, their first event before they became a regular weekly promotion, you kind of write that one off because it was so special and not everybody was inked to deals for the most part. But I got to tell you, I went into this with some very high expectations and I truthfully believe that AEW delivered and then some. Tonight's pay-per-view had a little bit of everything. You had some great women's wrestling, especially at the beginning of the night. You had a little bit of New Japan kind of brawling with Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, although I think their match tonight was better than the New Japan one from a couple of years ago. You had the cinematic Elite Deletion, which I thought was very good. And then you get the hardcore at the end. You get the Young Bucks FTR. And who would have ever thought after... And I agree with Tony Schiavone. Does anybody out there... by the way, Mystery Man, everyone else, we're not talking politics tonight. We're talking about AEW tonight. This is a pay-per-view recap. Not an election 2020 recap. We are talking pay-per-view. Now, maybe a $100 super chat might... changed my mind a little bit, because it's all about the money. No, really, don't do that. Don't do that. But I have a treat for you tomorrow. Monday. When I do Monday show at Mish, I'm going to put something on the air, something you'll get a kick out. A little props I have. Just think Young Bucks money. I got something inside I think in hindsight, get a little laugh over. So, but anyway, you had a little bit of everything tonight. But what I was going to say is, when was the last time you saw Chris Jericho do a Frankensteiner? Off the top rope. I mean, just everybody worked extremely hard tonight. It was a fabulous pay-per-view. Now, obviously, I'm not going to spend crazy amounts of time on each match, but I'll give you an overall rundown of what went down tonight. If you did not see the pay-per-view, and maybe you were just contemplating and, look, let's be honest. With COVID, with everything going on, I think AEW charging $60 for a pay-per-view is extremely steep. I'm not going to lie. So, even if you're a huge hardcore AEW fan, it's asking a lot. Yes, their pay-per-views are only every few months. And tonight we found out that Revolution is going to be, I think, February 27th. When I go in my notes, I have the date written down. So it's about 3.5 months away. So, maybe it's not so bad if you drop a 60 spot every 3 months. That's not so bad. Because if they did, let's say, a pay-per-view every 2 months, see, this is the funny thing. They could do a pay-per-view every 2 months. And then AEW said, well, you know what? Listen, we'll lower the price. We'll charge $39.99 instead of $59.99. Now everybody's like, oh, okay, that's better. Then I only have to spend $40 every 2 months or every 4 months. They spend $80. But then when you realize, yes, you get two pay-per-views instead of one, but the point is that when you go over a 3 or 4 month span, you end up spending more money. So $60 in one shot is steep. But I will tell you, honestly, I think they earned their money tonight. You really, I mean, I don't even know where we could complain about a match. Now, you're very welcome, Joseph. Now, for everyone out there, you know, look, I know a lot of you out there like to criticize Meltzer and Alvarez because they're, you know, big hardcore for AEW. You know, it's funny. Somebody last week was begging me, please, you know, talk about the clip that Hannibal put up with proof that Dave Meltzer is on AEW's payroll. And I said this with the utmost respect intended to that person who wanted me to do that on this show. And I'm like, okay, here's my my preview of my reaction to it. So fucking what? So what? Dave Meltzer is getting paid by AEW. It just blows me away. I don't like Wade Keller. Does anybody ever hear me talk about that? Oh, I watched Wade Keller tonight. I listened to Wade Keller tonight. I've read what he said tonight. No, if I don't like him, I don't pay attention to him. I don't listen to him. I don't watch him. I don't read him. So if Dave Meltzer pisses you off that much, why do you keep talking about him? Bring it. I'm going to break my head. I don't like Meltzer that much. Seriously, shut up. So what? So what? Oh, man. It makes him biased. Daniel, then don't fucking pay attention to him. Pay attention to somebody else who's not biased. Mike Johnson, PWSpyware.com, which you know is PW Insider. Back in the day, MLW, the original MLW, the first run, we caught Bauer getting hand jobs under the table, not literally, but, you know, and putting other people buried on page 11 because he was getting a little bit of a handout. When that happened, I'm like, fuck you. I'm not paying attention to this jerk off. Ignore these people. I don't get it. It's just like these goofs every Wednesday night. They'll make fun of AEW, make fun of AEW, make fun of AEW, make fun of AEW. And then 2 days later, you know, I'm convinced there is a ton of people, and I'm not trying to make light of this illness. There's a ton of people on social media that have undiagnosed bipolar disorder. Because they'll rip AEW and crack jokes. Oh, I'm just laughing. I'm just making jokes. I'm a stand-up comedian. Look at my tits jingle. And then 2 days later, oh, we're all wrestling fans. We all need to get along. Everybody should like what they want to like and hate what they want to hate. And then 3 days later, back to the same thing. So anyway, absolutely love tonight's pay-per-view. We will talk about it. First and foremost, you know, hey, look, I mean, I've been telling it like it is. You know, some people that are really, 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 really into Billy Corgan, you know, maybe it's kind of heartbreaking for them to just come right out and say it, but Billy Corgan and his NWA promotion, you know, it's starting to feel like Dennis Carluzzo 1993 all over again. And sure, COVID is the cause this time around. We didn't have COVID in 93. But the difference is, you know, he's sitting back with his guitar on the sidelines, and I'm a big fan of Billy Corgan, and I've been putting over NWA under his regime on these shows, talked about a lot of Wednesday nights. But Ring of Honor is back doing shows. MLW is back doing shows. AEW never stopped doing shows. WWE, obviously. New Japan is back doing shows. Indie promotions all across the globe are doing shows. And this guy is laying back with his guitar, and he's like, yeah, Thunder Rosa, yeah, it's all right. You could go to, you know, United Wrestling, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's okay. You could go to AEW. Oh, Allison Kay? Yeah, we couldn't work out a deal. She tweets to everybody last week, hey, everybody, I'm a free agent. Thank you, NWA, for all the opportunities. So she tells everybody she's no longer on the NWA contract. What happens 24 hours later? She gets booked for an NWA title match. Am I missing something here? I mean, NWA, now it feels that it's just name. It's turning into just name. And you know why that's a shame? Because Nick Aldis is working his balls off to try to keep it relevant and trying to do it. Billy Corgan, I understand COVID is a risk, but you know, you can't just sit back until 99.99. I have pants, shorts on, everybody. Can't just sit back with the guitar. You know, I'm waiting for the vaccine. I'm waiting for the vaccine. Because, I mean, what are you waiting for? Seriously. Oh, no, Sting did not show up. All those goofs out there. You know, I told you Wednesday. I thought people were fantasizing and hoping that he would show, but there was no proof behind it, you know? By the way, did you see the goofs tonight with this? Did you see this picture? This is before Kenny Omega came out for his entrance. And you see the goofs? I'm telling you, these are not 14-year-olds writing this stuff. These are 30, 40, 50, and 60-year-olds that think they're fucking hilarious on social media. And they're like, look, everybody, The Undertaker showed up at AEW. The Undertaker, look, it's The Undertaker. I tell you, man, I've been talking about social media for years and years and years, and how many people's lives have been totally ruined over social media. There's definitely no coincidence. Is that the right way to put it? That 95% of these people that embarrass themselves at your age, not your shoe size, that 95% of these people that do this, see, I'm still under the weather. 95% of the people that do this have no significant other. Whether it's a man, a female, in between, whatever, binary, they have nothing. Because I would be an embarrassed motherfucker if I was dating someone and I looked at their social media and like, look, everybody, it's The Undertaker. Look, everybody. Pellegrino water hits the spot. Man. So, by the way, for people that may not have seen the pay-per-view and maybe wasn't paying attention at the main event tonight, Eddie Kingston paying tribute. I think it might have been for three people instead of two. His outfit, you know, his green and white outfit was a tribute to Mitsuharu Misawa, for those that don't know. I'm waiting for goofs to go on social media and talk about how Mitsuharu Misawa was fat. They know nothing about the man's career. Eddie Kingston comes out also with the T-shirt, paying tribute to Tracy Smothers. I think the bandana was also a little bit of a tribute to Homicide, in my opinion. Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, it was pretty cool tonight. Young Bucks versus FTR. That was a little bit of an interesting match. Because you had the tag teams at one point doing finishers of a lot of other wrestlers, and it was very interesting that happened. And shout out to Robbie and Mikey, who PM'd me during the pay-per-view. I remembered when I talked Wednesday about that infamous match that I watched, the Raven versus Al Snow in Jersey All Pro Wrestling. And, you know, at one point during the match, they just did everybody's finishers. The match was mostly Gaga. For 20, 25 minutes, we had some action, but it was mostly Gaga. And they were doing the wrestling moves of everyone else. And when the match was over, we were like, wow, that was fucking great. And then when you thought about it, like, these guys didn't really do all that much. So that match was interesting. And then you got a member of FTR. No flips, just fists. And one of them attempts to do a 360 flip, blah, 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 you know, somersault, whatever. And fails and loses from a super kick with no shoes on, I might add. It was very interesting. Yes, FTR did their old DIY finisher. Forgive me, everyone. I got a little frog in my throat. I mean, I usually drink a little bit of stuff during the shows. You know what it was? Didn't I say this last night that hopefully I don't lose my voice doing so many shows? I work in an office. I talk all day long. And you do a show Monday. Then you do a show Wednesday. Then you do a show Friday, Saturday. Tomorrow's the Q&A. Monday's breakfast soup. Tuesday is Patreon. Wednesday is Wednesday Night Dynamite. Next Thursday, who knows? So hopefully my voice holds out. So you know what that means? Let's discuss the pay-per-view. The buy-in match tonight. Allison Kay unsuccessful in her attempts at getting the NWA championship, gaining a title for a promotion that last week she said she was no longer part of. Personally, in my opinion, I don't think this match was set when Allison Kay was no longer with NWA and posted that announcement. Because if this match was, you know, already set, I would think Allison Kay probably would have had the match, and then after the match is over, she posts the announcement that she's no longer under NWA contract. Then we would have had this match tonight under its belt. Allison Kay is a former NWA Women's Champion. She's legit. She is very, very talented. And I tell you, you think about the beginning of the night tonight, especially after their match, and Serena Deeb, who retained, gets confronted by Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa wants a rematch. You know, again, NWA needs to start the ball rolling again. They need to announce something. They need to do something. I mean, if all of your wrestlers could work for AEW, could work for Tom's Ribs and Wrestling, work here, then why can't they work under your own fucking building with no fans in attendance? If you're afraid about fans getting COVID, because I'm wondering, seriously, if maybe the building itself is not up to code during COVID. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the building, but if you have heard my rants in the past about the restaurant situation in New York, a lot of states are requiring people who have indoor businesses to change their ventilation system, change their lighting, change their scene. I don't know what it applies for their home grounds, but you know, I'm sure that there's a building, a warehouse, something somewhere that they can rent and do some shows. And, you know, it's, I don't know. But, you know, when you think of AEW and everybody talks about the women's division and saying that it doesn't get enough airtime, you know, tonight, at the beginning of the night, you're left with Thunder Rosa, Serena Deeb, and Allison Kay. AEW puts all three of them on their payroll and gets them. That ups the women's division tenfold for AEW. Yes, let's be honest. There'll be some women that you have seen in AEW Dynamite over the last year plus that would be bumped even lower on the food chain. Well, guess what? If you don't like being this low on the food chain, then you got to do something about it. You got to get better. You got to get noticed. You got to get attention. You got to improve your day. You know, look, Thunder Rosa at one point, WWE offered her a job as a referee. Now, you think about that now, and it's kind of comedic when you think about it. But what a lot of people seem to forget is that many years ago, when Thunder Rosa was offered the referee job, the Thunder Rosa you have now was not the Thunder Rosa back then. Thunder Rosa back then was much lower in the food chain. I don't know why I'm talking cartoonish, but, you know, she worked her ass off. She socialized online. Very, very interactive, very, very classy, didn't, you know, get political, you know, would just always, you know, be positive and just worked and worked and worked. Little by little, she started getting momentum. In fact, I know one of the first Wednesday Night Dynamite episodes I did, when she first came to NWA, I remember on my show saying, yo, to some of you out there that never heard about Thunder Rosa before, you know, I know, you know, there was something with an MMA match or something, but I'm like, keep her on your radar. You know, you're going to see this is a big star in the making. Now, 1,000 other people said that. So I didn't say anything that other people didn't. But, you know, she's on some serious momentum right now. And yeah, Toke, no shit. Serena Deeb is signed. I covered it on this show 3 times. My point is Serena Deeb, you know, takes 2 to tango. And sorry, no offense, Serena Deeb versus Nyla Rose might not be all that enticing right now. Serena Deeb versus Akara Shida might not be all that enticing right now. Serena Deeb is uber talented, and she's a great coach as well. But she's not a ratings barn burner right now. She is, a little bit past her prime. But she's also the NWA Women's Champion right now. So, my point is, right now, everybody looks at Thunder Rosa and identifies her as an NWA wrestler who is getting some opportunity in AEW. Serena Deeb, as you just said, to your credit, Serena Deeb gives the impression that this is an AEW wrestler who is holding the NWA title right now, maybe to get NWA a little bit more exposure. But sooner or later, you're going to have paths cross again, because what people need to remember is, when you had Shida versus Thunder Rosa and they were teasing both champions, right? Both belts were not on the line, obviously, but that was just like a special challenge match. Now you have an AEW contracted wrestler with the NWA Women's Championship. So now it feels like she's got the belt right now to give it a little more exposure in AEW because she's part of AEW. And that's great for Serena Deeb because she gets a lot of more TV time that she probably wouldn't have gotten. But it gets to a point that you have to say to yourself, why is the NWA belt keep being defended in this company? There's got to be a specific purpose behind it. You know what I mean? You think back when I was talking about, when the NWA invaded WWF in the 90s, Jim Cornette was already in the WWF, and he also was affiliated with the NWA, and he had Dan Severn in there, and Bombastic Bart, and Bodacious Bullshit Bob, So there's got to be some purpose behind it. And again, when you have all these other feds working, and you're not, but you're putting your woman's champion and probably your number one woman on the roster showing up in AEW, tell me why NWA is not doing stuff right now. Tell me why. I mean, if it's such a health risk, then why are your employees, your contracted wrestlers, working other feds? So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But this match was very good. I mean, it could have gone longer, but it was the buy-in. And honestly, it was very appropriate for the buy-in match because it was for a title that's not part of the AEW promotion. But again, the fact that Thunder Rosa, shows up and is basically issuing a challenge to Serena Deeb, the rematch, we know that's going to be fire. Now, it may not happen for a couple of weeks, but it's definitely something to look forward to. Enjoyed it very much. Now, the main show, we started off with a match I think nobody thought was going to open. Hangman Page versus Kenny Omega in a tournament final. The winner becomes the number one contender for the AEW championship. I've been calling, look, let's be honest, we all did. We picked this tournament perfectly. I mean, it was very, very predictable also. Kenny Omega, some of you thought Hangman Page was going to win, and definitely was a good choice. But as I've been saying for a while now, 2021 is going to be Kenny Omega's year. And I honestly think that even though PWI is more of a fluff piece now than anything else, I think Kenny Omega wants to reclaim his number one ranking in the world of pro wrestling. And this match tonight, in my opinion, better than their New Japan match. I thought it was a really cool touch to see Don Callis make an appearance to do a little bit of commentary. And I'll tell you something else. If anybody that follows my shows for a while now, you might remember one of the shows where I talked about a guy that was going to try to run a promotion, and he got Jericho to invest some bucks behind him. And he also got, I think, Kenny Omega and Don Callis to get involved as well. And I know the footage is still on YouTube, but it ended up that it was either a sham or, but the promotion never happened. But I referenced two or three times over the years a podcast episode. It might have been Jericho's, where he did a three-way episode with him, Kenny Omega, and Don Callis. And they talked about tons of topics. Wasn't just this promotion. This promotion, does anybody remember the promotion that they were supposed to be involved in? Because I know, you know, Jericho had invested a decent amount of money in it as well. But that's how I found out about this episode. I was looking to get info about that Fed, and I came across that episode. And what I learned on that episode is the close relationship that Don Callis has with Kenny Omega. Franchise says it was wrestling retribution. That could very well have been it. That could very well have been it. But yes, Lion also brings up the fact that Callis, Jericho, and Kenny Omega are all Canadians. But yes, Don Callis is still an Impact. In fact, they let him name drop that he's the executive vice president of Impact tonight on the pay-per-view. But, you know, when they said that Don Callis was there as a guest of Kenny Omega tonight, that was true. That was absolutely true. And I'll be honest with you. I almost, you know, this made this probably the New Yorker in me saying this from just loving the New York wrestling scene all these years. But I honestly thought in the beginning of the night, if Don Callis was there to show support for Kenny Omega in this match, I was hoping that maybe we have a little New York contingency, not to come out with Eddie Kingston, but maybe sitting in the crowd and, you know, just the New York, you know, DHS, you know, being there. But, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, it is what it is. But Don Callis, you know, did he add a lot to the match tonight? No. I mean, whether he was part of it or not, I don't think it would have mattered as far as wrestling fans go. But these guys, as Tony Schiavone said tonight, these guys had an ass-kicking match. An ass-kicking match. Shout out to Ken, terminated by DQ. Did I predict that one or two matches would end in the Broadway? Oh, no. No contest, like a time limit draw? No, I don't remember ever saying that. Yes, and I'll be honest with you. You know, you bring up a very good point. I'm happy the Young Bucks got the belts. I honestly thought that stipulation was asinine and ridiculous. It was not needed. You fucked it up with Cody. And I don't think there's any fans that are tuning in to AEW because Cody is keeping his word and never fighting for the title. You know, that's restricting yourself. You know, I always think of WCW, Goldberg versus Hogan, that main event at Nitro, 40,000 people in the Georgia Dome. And you look back and I'm like, how the fuck do you not do this on pay-per-view and rake in crazy-ass cash? Especially, and it's not just the pay-per-view buy rate. Now you have all your fans going on a Sunday instead of a Monday night. You probably get pay-per-view revenue, merchandise, shirts, food. Yes, you get food and stuff and some merch on Monday shows, but it's such a different animal. So by now, if Cody was able to fight for the heavyweight title, you know, I understand being noble. I'm going to step aside. Let other people fight for those. Oh, that's very fucking noble. But at the end of the day, this is a business. And I don't think Shad Khan or Tony Khan, when they see, oh my God, right now, oh, we could do Cody versus Moxley for the heavyweight title. I'm not saying it should be, but I mean, if you just see that momentum going a certain way, or Kenny Omega ends up being a champion down the line, and now all your fans want Cody versus Omega for the title, and then you have ringing through your ear Cody saying 1,000 times, I'll never fight for the title. Yes, yes, I've said it since day one. Ultimately, it'll turn into a storyline, and the fans will think that they changed the future of AEW, because they wanted Cody so bad. There is no way, no way, no way Cody will never fight for the AEW Heavyweight Championship. There's no way. But when they decide to change it, you're going to do it in a way where AEW fans will be like, we were so powerful, we convinced Tony Khan and Cody to change their mind. It's because of us. You see how interactive? And maybe that's smart business. But you fucked it up with Matt Hardy in the last match with Sammy Guevara. And sure, Matt Hardy probably, you know, was to win. But if I lose, I have to leave AEW. The fucking guy got concussed. Didn't even know what decade we were in. You know, he's probably looking for Gangrel, you know. By the way, so cute. So cute to see so many experienced podcasters or websites tonight that had no fucking clue as to why Gangrel showed up in the Elite Deletion. As I'm watching this, I'm just thinking of my history show with the New Brood. They didn't have a fucking clue. Why is Gangrel there? What were you doing in the late 90s? You're 50. What were you doing? You know? Oh, man. I think some people should Google before they ask the question, especially when they claim that that's why I love the Lars stuff so much. All these people that followed NXT, even, you know, even last year. And Lars cuts a promo. Wow, Lars could actually talk. Huh? Like, what happened to his whole NXT career? Oh, look, did you see that move that he did? Yeah, he's only done it 95 times. So anyway. So, getting back to my point. You know, the Young Bucks, they didn't need to put that stipulation. And by the way, up until tonight, they basically it was, if they lose, they can never fight for the titles tonight. Jim Ross tonight said, if they don't win the titles. Well, that's a little bit different wording now. But there was no need to put that stipulation on there. Because if one of them would have gotten injured, and you put the belts on them anyway, because the stipulation is if they lose, they can't fight for the titles again. Totally unnecessary. Not needed. On a stack card like this, it was not needed. But I'll tell you this, just to answer what Ken is saying. That match, as much as you may be happy that the Young Bucks won, as much as you will agree with me that that match was very, very good. It was excellent. But I think it went a little bit too long. And at some points, I started thinking, is there a time limit draw on this match? I mean, is this going to possibly go to a draw where nobody wins and nobody loses? And I'm like, oh, I don't know how that would actually, you know, like sit with a lot of people out there. But, you know, it was very, very good. But that stipulation was totally, totally not needed. So now we go back to Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. These guys, you took a shot every time they chopped each other, you'd be pissed drunk right now. You would still think that, well, no, we're not going to say that. We're not going to get political tonight. But the match was excellent. It was very, very physical. I mean, there was one point where Kenny Omega landed on the guardrail feet first and then did a moonsault. And I know a lot of you out there probably started getting memories, flashbacks of AJ Styles doing that before. I did, without a doubt. Then you had another moment. Hangman Page was outside of the ring. And look, I don't write tons of notes, but little things that catch my eye, I put a little sentence down just to remind everyone. But there was one point also where Kenny Omega was in the ring. Hangman Page was outside the ring, and he's like on the rampway, and he grabs the top rope, and he's going to try to dive into the ring. Kenny Omega hit him with a beautiful-looking V-trigger. I mean, just connected. The camera work was phenomenal tonight. You even had another point where Hangman Page hit a pop-up powerbomb to Kenny Omega outside the ring. Then he did one inside the ring for almost a three count. I mean, there was a lot of very, very close finishes tonight. I don't think the referee screwed up tonight. I mean, you know, give that credit to the referees tonight, because I honestly don't recall any complaints about the referees. This might, as far as AEW pay-per-views go, this might have been one of the best worked shows as far as AEW referees go. If I put it this way, you know, there's an old saying, like, if you don't recognize, like, somebody working in the background, that means they're doing a very good job. The fact that we didn't think about any, hey, we got Mike Chioda tonight also. Nice to see Mike Chioda, you know, back doing a high-profile match, which was the tag title match, by the way. But anyway, you know, the only thing I will say tonight about referees is that there was one point, and I'm nitpicking right now. I mean, it's my job to nitpick once in a while. But there was one point during the Omega Hangman Page match where they were both outside the ring, and the referee started counting. And I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, isn't this match that there must be a winner, that somebody must win the match? And he started doing the count, and I was saying to myself, why is he, you know, almost, you know, teasing he's going to count people out of the ring? It's the only thing that didn't make sense the whole night to me. But basically, in the end, you had Kenny Omega hit two very, very well-executed V-triggers onto Hangman Page, and then he hits the one-winged angel for the win. You know, personally, I was talking to people online during the pay-per-view, and you take 5 minutes off of the Young Bucks match and put it on Hangman Page and Kenny Omega, they think that this could have been in possibly top five or top 10 matches of the year. I mean, I think that they could have gone longer. It was a very good match. You know, we didn't have any antics tonight. You know, I mean, look, obviously a lot of people see the transformation of Kenny Omega to the cleaner, but there were moments tonight that it felt like there was no signs whatsoever of Kenny Omega turning, you know, full-blown heel. I think a lot of people don't understand sometimes, you know, how the Bullet Club worked or how they worked in Japan and their characters. You know, the Young Bucks right now, it feels like they are straight-up baby faces. Look what they did for the month leading up to it, you know? And then after, Kenny Omega celebrating with them, and I don't know if you noticed Hangman Page all the way in the corner, like the puppy dog, like I said, the puppy dog who was left outside, you know? The family's inside, all at the dinner table, eating, having great dinner on a Sunday. It's 30 degrees out, and you look outside the glass door and outside with his nose up in the window, and you see the breath is the dog, and the dog can't come in. That's what Hangman Page looked like, that dog that I always talk about. You're not allowed in. And he just looked like the bruised, not physically, but emotionally. You know, he was by the stage tunnel, Hangman Page, so cute. But, you know, I thought the opening match was very, very good. So as you're going to hear on this show, I mean, really, I don't have much to complain about. And you know me, I'm not one of these diehard, you know, like, you know, very biased AEW. I'm a supporter, and I will criticize where needed. Tonight, really, not much to criticize. John Silver versus Orange Cassidy. The match opened up with your typical comedy with Orange Cassidy, putting the hands in the pockets, polite kicks on the side, and then John Silver at one point pulls Orange Cassidy's hands out of his pocket, and then he rips the pockets off, which I thought that was, the way they did it on the match, I thought was very good. And he's posing, you know, we could take this down for a minute. He's posing, he's got the pockets in his hand, he's happy. You know, if John Silver was around in the 70s, I honestly think he could have been a member of the Vachons. He probably would have been Just think about that. John Vachon. We had Mad Dog Vachon. We had Butcher Vachon. Luna Vachon. Well, Luna came later on. We would have had, just think of that name. I just came up with that. How goofy of a name would that be? He's a member of the legendary Vachon family. He's John Vachon. John Vachon. But look, the match started out comedic, and it got serious into the match. John Silver, as I mentioned last week, getting a really nice cult following online. You know, people are really enjoying his work. And you look at the guy and you kind of say to yourself, like, what? How does he stand out? Like, does he have any identity other than being a member of the Dark Order? But, yeah, John Vachon. I want to get an iron on from John Vachon. I got a John Vachon iron on. Why does that sound wrong? Remember the iron-on tattoos? I still got all those Cody tattoos. Remember, I was going to put them all over my face, look like I had the chicken pox, but it's the Cody tattoos. So I got to use them soon. They're probably going to get bad after a while. So, but look, in the end, Orange Cassidy defeats John Silver. You know, at one point, John Silver, I think, went for the discus forearm. That's what Brody Lee usually uses. Orange Cassidy countered with the orange punch and in the beach break. You know, I tell you, I'm starting to get the names for all the finishers. But it's just funny how some names, like you can't just, why don't they just use the regular generic name? There was something tonight like Midnight Owl or the Last Call. It was something Midnight. Anybody remember what that move was? And I'm like, it was just like a roll-up. And they're like, oh, with the Midnight, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, just call it the regular shit. Beach this, Orange this, August Gray. Oh, man, too many terminologies that are not needed. So nobody remembers what it was. But it was something like Midnight or like not the coffin drop. It was something Midnight something. I'm like, it was just a fucking roll-up. What are you talking about? But good match. You know, I enjoyed the fact that once again, we get to see that Orange Cassidy is not just comedy. You know, I've seen some of his work outside of AEW before he ever came into that company, and the guy actually could work. But, you know, it's a little bit of a comedic gimmick. And over the years, we've had comedic gimmicks. I mean, for the people out there that get so pissed off at, you know, some of the comedy he does, or, I mean, honestly, I know this is Mario and I haven't put it in storage yet, but seriously, for all those people that complain about Orange Cassidy, this is what I have to say to you. Seriously. No, I'm not giving you the middle finger. What is it like? Cobra? Like Santino Marella stuff? Oh, my God. I mean, and then he doesn't know what his hand could do. You know, they should have done like an X-rated version of that with Santino Marella where he doesn't have control of his hand and then he's like goes up to a diva and just, you know, I'm saying an X-rated film, like a spoof of WWE. It's like, you know, like. Anyway, Orange Cassidy with the win. After they win, best friends come out, give Orange Cassidy a hug. By the way, a very, very comfortable 72 degrees tonight in Daly's place. 72 degrees. If I had a shot every time Jim Ross told us tonight the temperature of the building, it's a comfortable 74. It's a paltry 72. It's a very enjoyable 72. It's very, very clear in 72. I mean, at one point, I thought he was going to... How old is Jim Ross? I thought at one point he was going to be like, you know, oh, the temperature is just like my age, 72. You know, I mean... It's okay. I mean, made me a little jealous, even though today I think it went up to the upper 60s over here. But somebody check Jim Ross's age. You know what I got to do? I got to bring one of my Alexas in this room. Seriously. I mean, obviously, I would have to call it like computer or Echo because still, every time I watch Raw now, I have to literally sometimes lower the TV when they do like Firefly stuff because it keeps saying overall, what's Alexa Blister? Beep. Every time the TV says Alexa, my thing goes off. You rang? What do you want? Stop bothering me. Jim Ross was born 1952, which would make him 68. All right, 68. Okay, so, you know, a very paltry, you know, it's similar, almost like my age, you know. God bless Jim Ross, man. I know he's obviously, you know, up there in years for his career, but I have said this since day one that he's been doing stuff for AEW. You know, Jim Ross at 70% is still a hell of a lot better than a lot of other people out there. I have no problem with his commentary. You know, sometimes, you know, it's some of the work that you see in the ring, you know, is a little bit different than what, you know, they are used to. So what? So what? That's what I have to say. By the way, last week, Cody Rhodes told everybody that he got the name Rhodes back. He got his name Rhodes back. And but he wasn't going to use it. He was only going to use it in third-party stuff. Anybody, the comment, it was like 2 days ago. And Cody, you know, you ever see that Geico commercial? And it, like, gets erect. It turns. I think all of you have potential. You have potential. You have potential. That was Cody. Hey, everybody, I got my name Rhodes back, but I'm not going to use it in AEW. I'll probably just use it in third parties. And, you know, I love, you know, obviously I love my family's name, but I think I'm going to, you have potential. Pinocchio, that's what it was. Cody, Pinocchio. Cody-o-chio. Cody-o, you have potential. Seriously, isn't that the Geico commercial? I look at this room and I see nothing but potential. What happened tonight? Excalibur says Cody Rhodes. Justin Roberts says Cody Rhodes. Jim Ross says Cody Rhodes. The Ding says Cody Rhodes. The group says Cody. I'm fine with it. Good. He should have been able to have the name Cody Rhodes since day one. But as I watched this tonight, I just pictured that, you know, with his interviews. Did that look all right? Like, I can't look while I'm saying it. Like, I have to look like this. But, what about all his interviews for the last year and a half? Oh, I could use Cody Rhodes if I want. I just want to be Cody. They're using Cody Rhodes. Good. Good. Why make it into such a big fucking deal? Year and a half ago, 2 years ago, he could have just said, look, WWE is giving me a little bit of a problem with the Rhodes name, so I'm just going to go with Cody. But, you know, one time, oh, I could use it. Oh, you know, this and that. Oh, blah, 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 blah. And then 2 days ago, oh, I could use it now, but I'm not going to use it in AEW. I'll use it for third party. When I go on a TV show, they could say Cody Rhodes, and they'll talk about my dad and this, this and that. Thank you very much for the kind words, Danger Russ. Danger, I like that. Danger Russ. Danger Russ. I like that. I swear to God. That's a good name. No, but seriously, am I lying to the big diehard AEW fans out there? Am I making that up? I mean, why make such a big thing about it? You know, you just throw it out there. You let it subside. You get the name back. Hey, everybody, I got the name back. You know, and I should be, I'm proud to be a Rhodes. That's it. That's it. Tonight, I mean, they said it 100 times, but it was fine. But I will tell you, I got this match wrong. I mean, is Cody 2 years from now, is he going to be the 17-time TNT champion? Because Darby Allin, you know, with all due respect, you know my thoughts on Darby Allin. Definitely a bright star, big future, barring injury and, you know, personal screw-up. But the thing is, if you've actually watched his in-ring work for a while now, you know, getting that title shot, I think a lot of people thought alternate, you know, people. But Cody just got that title back, and obviously to represent the TNT, you know, company, the network. And the match tonight, it was fine. By the way, I have to show this. I loved Cody coming out with, I think that was a 91 Mazda. I know that car very well. My ex-girlfriend had a 91 Mazda. And I took a Benzie Box radio and threw it through a window and we broke up. So remember the Benzie Boxes? Benzie Boxes! Took a Benzie Box right through that fucking Mazda's window. So that car realistically is only worth about $300. Wouldn't surprise me if they got it from a junkyard, sprayed it with the whatever they sprayed, then it got crushed. 1992? All right, 1992. I was close. 91, 92, pretty much the same. You know, but that's how Darby Allin came out. I was fine with it, but I never in a million years ever thought that Darby Allin was going to win tonight. Arn Anderson looking healthy as ever, if you know what I'm talking about. And that, God bless him. You know, he's got the clipboard and he's basically telling Cody, you know, you're bigger, you're stronger, use your power, your muscle to win this. And the match at some points was a little bit slow. I mean, it brought a little brawl outside the ring, a little bit inside the ring, but it felt like Cody wasn't taking Darby as serious as he should. And, you know, there was a couple of points. At one point, which I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but you go back and you watch it, yeah, maybe you could seriously get hurt from it, but Cody had a hammerlock on Darby Allin and then throws him over the top rope while he still had the hammerlock on him, so, you know, that's obviously impressive power. But there was one point where Cody hit the crossroads off the top rope and almost got a three count, but Darby Allin's arm was under the ropes. Wait a minute. I just think I made an error that nobody picked up on. Didn't Mike Chioda? No, Mike Chioda didn't referee the Young Bucks match. He doesn't do those tag team matches. You know, you got that goof out there. Like, Mike Chioda refereed Cody and Darby Allin. Yeah. I just realized that. I'm like, wait a minute, I talked about Mike Chioda. I remember the crowd going, Chioda. Yeah, so I made that mistake, but shame on all of you for not correcting me, seriously. But, you know, the match, at some points, you know, when he hit the crossroads and Darby's arm was under the rope, to me, that was good storytelling, not only on the part of Darby, but also Mike Chioda picking up on that. You know, what happened towards the end was Cody went for a crossroads. Darby Allin turned it into an inside cradle. And basically, they kept reversing each other with inside cradles. Darby would attempt it, Cody would attempt it. Darby would attempt it, Cody would attempt it. Darby attempted, got the three count. Unexpected. Nobody thought it was going to happen. Cody was shocked. I was shocked. I mean, it was, you know, the way the sequence went, it was, like, unexpected. And there was a multitude of two counts leading up to that. So before you could ingest it, you know, digest it and enjoy it, they want to get the attention off of what just happened. So you had Taz come out once again. And, you know, as I've said for a while now, that whole thing with Taz and Darby Allin should have been done a while ago. But they come out, Ricky Starks, Brian Cage, and they beat up both Cody and Darby Allin. Then it was weird at one point. Like, Brian Cage picks up Darby Allin, and he brings him to the back of the arena. And it was this cardboard, like, stand of Full Gear with a light behind it just so it would be a little bit bright. And he puts Darby through the cardboard, and they're selling it like he went through a plate glass window. And I'm like, wow, that's just like a piece of cardboard. It just looks so like unpainful. But then what they do is they bring him outside and they open the driver's door of the 92 Mazda, and they're about to slam Darby's arm in the door, similar to the Four Horsemen. Did the Four Horsemen do that to Dusty? Who remembers? The Four Horsemen did that once before. Was it Dusty that they tried to do it to? Because I remember Larry Zbyszko. No, wait. Was that? Oh, I'm thinking maybe more than one. Larry Zbyszko did that once before because they called him Larry the Cruncher. Yeah, so the Four Horsemen did it to Dusty, but I think the Dangerous Alliance may have done it also, because Larry was never a member of the Four Horsemen, and Larry Zbyszko did it once, and they called Larry the Cruncher. Anybody remember that? Larry the Cruncher, Zbyszko. I was a fan of Larry Zbyszko's, man. You know, I didn't wait until those Viagra commercials or whatever he was doing to like Larry. I always liked Larry. But no, Larry did something to somebody's arm. He had to. They called him the Cruncher after a while. Maybe he didn't do it to Dusty. But, okay, Barry Windham's hand got crushed. Okay. I know multiple people got crushed, but they were going to do that with Darby Allin tonight. And Will Hobbs makes the save. And the funny thing about it is, if you go back and you watch it, when Will Hobbs races to chase them away, it almost turned into a bad cartoon. You have Darby Allin's hand in the doorway of the door. And really, if you were to close the door hard on it, you really would have broke his arm. You know, because trust me, I've had a couple of times over the years, anybody out there ever get your finger caught in the door? You slam the door shut and your finger somehow is in the corner. Any of that ever happened to you? It happened to me two or three times in my life. Oh, it is the most painful thing. It's more painful when you have like pants on with no underwears and you zip it up and, you know, the zipper gets caught somewhere. That happened once to me. Ooh, that was painful too. Yeah, a few people had that. But the finger in the door, I can't believe that I never broke my fingers from it. But the funny thing is, when you go back and you watch Will Hobbs, if you look at it again, Will Hobbs, from his momentum and his size and his power, you know, you go back and you look, I don't know if you could really see it in this picture. You sort of can. But you see, like, there's not that much distance on the right where the door is. And when Darby Allin, they almost did that to his arm, and Will Hobbs makes the save, it looked like Will Hobbs almost closed the door. You know, like, he almost, if he would have hit that door, I'm sorry, even though I don't want to see Darby Allin get injured, obviously, I would have laughed my ass off. He ran, I honestly thought he was going to hit the door and the door was going to close on Darby's arm, by accident, obviously. But now they're trying to incorporate Will Hobbs in this once again. And honestly, I think the reason why they're incorporating Will Hobbs, you know, I said something on Wednesday's show last week that some people said, you know, DT, you may be onto something. I didn't put it in the synopsis because right now I'm unsure. But after tonight, now I'm starting to think twice that maybe I am onto something, that AEW has no fucking clue what to do with the big guys, the giant guys. I'm not talking about 7 feet five, John. I'm talking about the big guys, the stocky guys. Because if you notice, they ain't doing shit with Brian Cage. They ain't doing shit with Lance Archer. Will Hobbs, they don't have a fucking clue right now how to use him. And you look at Brody Lee, he's in Schenectady having barbecues right now. Like every big man, you know, like somebody you walk up to and write, hey, big man, what's going on? Matt Cardona is not under contract, Prince. Matt Cardona was there for a couple of appearances, and that was it. He's not under contract. I don't know if I think I mentioned that once before. But, you know, and I'm not knocking any of these people. But now it seems, because you saw the promo tonight with Lance Archer, and it feels like Lance Archer and Jake the Snake are now going for Taz and Brian Cage, Team FTR, whatever. Then you look at Will Hobbs getting involved in this, and it's like, okay, let's just have all the big men feud with each other And we'll let everybody else with the titles and everybody else get all the TV time. That's what it feels like. I might be onto something that they don't know what the fuck to do. And I still cannot get past that comment that Cody said in that interview on Dynamite 2-3 weeks ago with Dasha Fuentes when he was outside with his car and he said, we're a light heavyweight promotion. That stuck out to me because why would you even make a comment like that? Seriously, when you think about that, why would you even say that? And then I'm looking at all these like uber huge guys and I'm like, anybody notice that it seems like they don't know what the fuck to do with them? So now it's like, oh, let's just let them all play in a corner. That's what it feels like to me. I don't know. Sam, I do remember that 6-man tag they were supposed to have, but no, that was a little different because there was like, I think some COVID involved. Didn't Lance Archer get COVID? Somebody caught COVID and they had to improvise. Somebody had something with a health issue. And, you know, but still, I mean, Lance Archer, it bothers me more than anybody. Because Lance Archer was booked as a monster coming into this promotion. And he hit the Cody wall in the AEW TNT title tournament. Okay, fine. Since then, really not much about it, anything. He had a little bit with Moxley, but you knew that wasn't going to go anywhere. So you have Darby Allin is your TNT champion. And by the way, Cody tried to make the save a couple of times for Darby Allin as well, and Cody kept getting, you know, beat up as well. So, you know, not a bad match. Not a bad match. I don't know why they're getting this time on a pay-per-view, but they're interviewing the Natural Nightmares backstage and QT Marshall getting all this mic time. And it was funny. It almost felt like it was like a little side joke to everybody online. It's like, why is fucking QT Marshall getting any TV time whatsoever? Nothing against him personally. But he's like, you know, when you're part of the biggest family and you get TV time. I'm like, who dat? Who dat? And they're hyping up this bunkhouse match on Wednesday, which will probably be good. But I'm like, you know, this is a pay-per-view. Stick with just the pay-per-view stuff. So Ken is saying that on his Super Chat, he was talking about the tournament that Kenny Omega won. What are you talking? Let me see. Let me see. I don't understand what you mean. Didn't I predict that one or two matches would end in a Broadway? WWE does it in many tournaments. Okay, you figured AEW would follow. No, I understand that. I understand that. But, you know, Kenny Omega, 2021 is going to be the year of Kenny Omega. No doubt about it. Now, their next pay-per-view is not till February of next year. By February of next year, we're going to have that vaccine. It's going to be very, very close to WrestleMania. You're going to have had the Super Bowl already. They had almost 1,000 people there tonight. So things are going to be a lot more normal than it is right now. So Kenny Omega, I'm telling you, remember what I've been saying. I think Kenny Omega is looking to reclaim his number one spot as the guy in pro wrestling. And I don't think there's any secret about it. We're on the verge of things going to the next level as far as, you know, COVID getting, you know, under control. Yeah, I know that there's a lot of new cases, and that's because people are irresponsible. You know, I like I said, I'm not getting political tonight at all, but I have not watched an ounce of news in the last 48 hours. Not because I'm mad or anything like that, but because, you know, I want to enjoy my weekend. I want to enjoy it with you, watch the pay-per-view, spend time, you know. But the thing is that I did hear about a lot of celebrations in the streets today. And yes, some people were definitely wearing masks, but there was a hell of a lot of people that weren't. And there were some TV spots by some people catching some people, you know, not wearing masks who were supposed to, that are very, very high in government. So my point is, you know, I'm not ripping one side and praising the other side. All I'm saying is that it's individual responsibility. You know, I mean, that's all it is. I haven't caught it. Most of you out there haven't caught it. And probably the reason why we haven't caught it is because when we go outside, we wear masks. We don't get in anybody's face. You know, we're not having anybody breathe or cough on us. We're not in a really close environment having a party where, you know, everybody's sharing the same air and it's just floating around, you know, mingling with everybody. And we also sanitize, wash our hands. You know, we're a little careful about it. There are, do I need to say it, three shows in a row? This is WWE personality. And, you know, I went on this person's Instagram. I won't say if it's male or female, but I went on this person's Instagram page and I saw 65 pictures and videos total, 65, 64, 65. And not one time was anybody wearing a mask. All different scenes in Florida, at a restaurant, at a party, at a bar, at a tiki bar, at a beach, at here, at there, nobody wearing a mask. And again, people are going to say, well, maybe they took the mask off to take the picture. No, there's actually video of people having dinner and the camera goes up to everybody and like it scrolls to the next person. Ah, you know, like they lift their drinks and nobody's wearing a mask. And this person has caught COVID before. So, hey, you want to go out and take the chances? You have that right. We live in a free country. You live in a free country where you can do something stupid, that you can drink or do drugs and get behind the wheel. Sure, if you get caught or you have an accident, you're fucked. That's why you shouldn't do it. But you live in a country where you have the right to do dumb things. I don't condone any of it, but when something does go wrong, you have nobody to blame but yourself. You know, you want to pick up somebody in a club, not have protection, think you pulled out in time, you accidentally get something to pray against, that's your responsibility. Nobody else to blame but yourself. So, yeah, Jeff, I agree. Let people do what they want, but there should be some guidance. You know, there should be some guidance. And if you're going to rip one person, you got to rip everybody. So, but anyway, so my point is, when we get to February, and that'll probably be Omega versus Jon Moxley for the title, we're going to have a large number of fans back in attendance. So, you know, who knows where this goes from here. So, you know, that's it. And look, I take all the precautions. I've brought it up before because I don't want to. A lot of people forget this. I went out for breakfast with my fiance in early March. And you all may remember, I said that, you know, we wore masks, kept distance, still had breakfast, came home, blah. 3 months straight, I didn't see my parents because they put such a scare in everybody that, and there was so many people dying. For 3 straight months, I did not see my parents. And the first time I saw them after 3 months, I got very choked up. And you know the health issues both my parents have. I don't need to bring it up again. But there ain't no fucking way that I'm going to put myself in a position where either A, I get them sick, B, that I get myself sick and thus can't see them. I will not do that because I don't know how much time they have left on this earth and I want to enjoy it to the maximum. That's all. So I do it for various reasons. So anyway, let's get back to the matches because we're already running an hour and 10 and I definitely would like to get out of here in the next 15 to 20 minutes tops. You know, there's really no reason to spend tons of time on each match. Hikaru Shida versus Nyla Rose. Look, if you're forcing me to say which match I like the least tonight, probably this one, because even Orange Cassidy and John Silver, yes, there was a lot of comedy, but they also upped it a notch. This match was not bad. Nyla Rose is improving. We're actually seeing Nyla Rose in real time turn into someone who is still who has a hell of a lot to learn. And look, there's never a time where you shouldn't stop learning. You know, you should always try to make yourself better. Doesn't matter what age you are or how many years experience you have in something, you should always try to, you should never be satisfied with and being complacent with mediocrity. You know, that's one of the reasons why I started doing video and, you know, tried to get myself in better shape. Didn't want anybody seeing this big fat roly-poly on camera over here that looks like, you know, I don't take care of myself. There's a lot of reasons why I did, but even, you know, video, try to get the best quality. Always try to strive to be better. I'm not going to just stay in mediocrity because it's easy. It's very easy to just get lazy and mediocre and stuff like that. But we're watching in real time Nyla Rose learning, improving, learning, and with every match, you know, and she's not getting a crazy amount of TV time. So when people complain like, oh, this match came out of nowhere, she really hasn't done anything. Well, yeah, because if she's on TV every week, then you have people saying like, why is she on TV every week? She doesn't deserve all this spot. So you can't have it both ways. But, you know, in the end, you know, she'd hit a Tamashii and a couple of knee strikes to get the win. You know, the match was okay. You know, it was a little bit sloppy sometimes. Vicky Guerrero had to be a little bit animated with a kendo stick early on, getting to use it, later on the referee taking it away. But after the match was over, and this was a little bit odd, only because the pairing was so new. After the match was over, Vicky was extremely upset, yelling at Nyla Rose, and actually slaps Nyla Rose in the face. And then Vicky goes off, and we don't see any conclusion to it. That's one thing that AEW needs to improve on. They have too many times where you have people in the ring and you expect a conclusion or something else to happen and nothing happens. I'll give you a good example. You had Paige and Omega last Wednesday that, you know, when the Young Bucks and they came out and made the save, like Kenny Omega gave a fist bump to Hangman Page, and then a moment later, Hangman Page pulls him in the middle of the ring, and they're having this awkward talk, and then we go to commercial. And it was just like nothing. Then we've had things with Colt Cabana. He loses. With the Dark Order, he loses. And there's like this confrontation, and you expect them to turn on Colt Cabana, and they go to a commercial. There's many, many times, even Private Party, that time when they came out, when nobody knew who attacked Matt, and the way they did it, it looked like that somebody was going to turn, and then go to commercial. So today, you have Nyla Rose getting slapped by Vicky, and obviously they're not going to commercial, it's pay-per-view, but they just went to the next segment, and it was really not much of a conclusion from it. Like, you know, and look, I don't want to compare AEW to WWE, but you know that I'll give you an example. It's a really bad example, but I know it's an example that you all know. Haku and Andre the Giant lose the tag titles, I think the Demolition, and I think that was the match. And after the match was over, Bobby Heenan was livid at Andre the Giant, yelling at him, and then he slaps him. And then Andre the Giant grabs Bobby Heenan, and that's that infamous pose with Haku in the background, ready to try to kick Andre. My point is, usually when a manager does something to someone after a loss and gets physical and slaps the person, usually that person will grab the manager and turn babyface. I don't want this prolonged abuse by Vicky berating, putting down Nyla, this and that. Nyla Rose is portrayed as the beast, and Vicky slaps her in the face. I don't care who she is. You know? Like that scene in Trading Places.
It was the Duke.
I know I'm going really old school tonight, but some people will get the reference, so. You have potential. You have potential. Anyway, so Hikaru Shida retains, and I tell you, they need to do better with the AEW Women's Championship. Not saying Hikaru Shida. They need to do better with the title. Because right now, I'm more interested in the NWA Women's title in AEW than the AEW Women's title in AEW. So I don't know how many people feel the same way, but I am much more looking forward to this than what we got tonight. So anyway, moving on to the next match. What do we got here? How come it's not moving? Okay, that's not good. How come it's not moving? We need it to move. There we go. Wait a minute. Why did it go all the way back? Hold on. Hold on. Maybe something is a little screwed up over here. Let's see. All right. Now, next. Nothing. Wow, that sucks. That's no problem. I could pull all audibles over here, everybody. I got pictures everywhere. You know, I try to get much more prepared now. So, all right. So here we go. Next on the agenda. Young Bucks winning the tag titles against FTR. You know, I already talked about some of this match already. The match was fine. I personally thought that it went maybe 5 minutes too long for the simple reason that, you know, number one, this pay-per-view started at 8 o'clock. And I personally think that AEW really needs to start thinking about, even though it's a Saturday night, but I think AEW needs to start thinking about starting these pay-per-views at 7 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock. For the simple reason that everything was so top quality tonight, by the end of the night, it is a little bit exhausting. And I think a lot of people, by the time we got Moxley versus Kingston, I think that they were very, very tired. And this match went on for a while. At one point in the match, we had all the tag partners paying tribute to other tag teams. FTR was paying tribute to the Hart Foundation and the Steiner Brothers. The Young Bucks were paying tribute to the Hardys and the Dudleys. There was a couple of other moments that I think even the commentators missed the psychology of the match. There was one point where Matt Jackson hit a super kick onto Dax. Now, earlier in the match, Dax injured his hand hitting the post, and they had to wrap it up, and, you know, he definitely injured it, but Dax had the wherewithal to use it in the storyline. He punched one of the Young Bucks, and he immediately started grimacing in pain with his hand. I mean, just sold it really well. But there was another point during the match where Matt Jackson hits a super kick on Dax, and Matt Jackson immediately is holding his leg because we know he's got a partially torn, I think, MCL and ACL. And the commentators never even picked up on it that, oh, you know, he's holding his leg because he's got an injury. I mean, obviously, they don't want to talk about it on TV all that much. But, there was a few points that were that I honestly thought that this could go to a time limit draw if that was applicable. There was a couple of times where there was a two count where it was kind of like, eh. And there was a couple of points, too. There was at least two times during towards the end of the match where, for some reason, FTR doesn't go for the pin. And it was just an awkward, like, confusion would probably be the best way to put it. Because there was one point, FTR, as I said earlier, they did the DIY, you know, from their days in WWE for a two count. There was another really cool moment where the Young Bucks had stereo sharpshooters on FTR. One was inside the ring, one was outside the ring. But then you have, you know, them trying to sell Matt Jackson's injury. They take the boot off, focusing on the foot. Then they do a spike pile driver, and they only get a two count. And even Jim Ross, I didn't even write this down, but I thought about it because it really was glaring. When Jim Ross even says, you know, like, somebody can't win with a spike pile driver off the top rope, that says something. I mean, because sometimes there's some moves that I personally think you should not use just for a two count. And that was one of them, in my opinion. Then we had another point where you had Matt Jackson and Cash Wheeler in the ring. And Matt Jackson was on his knees. And Cash Wheeler gives him a super kick and knocks him on his ass. And Cash Wheeler, instead of just going for the pin, is looking around like he's in a daze. And, you know, the commentators brought it up. We were all watching it. It just did not look good. And then he tries to do a springboard 450 onto Matt Jackson. And again, you know, these are, you know, all fists, no flips. He tries a 450 springboard. He misses Matt Jackson with the super kick. 1, 2, 3. The Young Bucks are tag champs. And Tully Blanchard was barred from ringside. So, you know, obviously we're going to see on Wednesday he's not thrilled with FTR at all. But, you know, it was a very interesting finish. Look, you try something that nobody thinks you could do, or you always say that you don't do, and because of that, you lose. And I was fine with him attempting the 450 springboard, the springboard 450. But the problem is, when he super kicked him and doesn't go for the pin, is instead looking around, not looking for his partner, but just looking around like, which way do I go, George? Which way do I go? Which way do I go, George? Which way do I go? Like, I'm like, come on, man. That was kind of goofy, in my opinion. So they win, and after the match is over, FTR looking very disappointed. Kenny Omega comes out, celebrates with the Young Bucks, as I said before. Hangman Page in the rampway in the corner, you know, like the dog that you don't let in the house, and everybody's eating and he's just watching everybody eat. That's what it looked like. The match was fine, but I think it went a little bit too long, in my opinion. So, but congratulations to the Young Bucks. You know, now with us turning the corner with COVID and the vaccination on the horizon, now they're starting to go, pun intended, full gear. Young Bucks, champions. Omega fighting for the title. Cody, we'll see what they do next. So you're going to see some people up a notch. And Pac is about to return. So that guy is going to get thrown right into this. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what is going on with AEW 3 months from now. So we could start seeing some seeds planted, but, you know, it's going to be really, really good. And I'm really looking forward to it. I absolutely am. So with that said, we get this. The Elite Deletion. Look, I didn't take tons of notes. I don't even know how you could do a play-by-play on this. So, best I could describe this, cinematic, Hardy Compound. You think of the cinematic matches they did in Impact Wrestling. We had one in WWE. You know, we had a little bit of teasing here and there with Matt Hardy doing stuff on the AEW Compound. And they do this match on the Compound. It was pre-recorded, obviously. And it was excellent that they did it this way, because they can trim and make this look like $1 million. Was this the best Hardy cinematic match of them all? No, not by a long shot. This felt like, and I think some people will say that's spot on, this felt like a greatest hits album, you know, of someone, like greatest hits. Like, you get like a summary of all of things together, and that's what this felt like. This was a greatest hits of the Hardy Compound. You know, you had it open up where, you know, it's all dark, and in the beginning, no music whatsoever. And you have Sammy Guevara. It looks like he comes in with a golf cart. And you have Neo, the drone, shows Matt Hardy, disables the golf cart, whatever that was supposed to be. And then Matt Hardy shows up with a monster truck that says Straight Jacket on it. But Straight is spelled S-T-R-A-I-T. And Matt Hardy runs over the cart and he gets out and he's like, that was orgasmic, which was freaking hilarious. We realize pretty quickly that Private Party is on hand. So if Private Party is on hand, you know that some people are going to be there for Sammy Guevara, and you think Inner Circle, and they went with Santana and Ortiz, and that makes a whole lot of sense. So they are not in the building for Jericho versus MJF, which I thought was excellent. So then basically, a referee appears out of nowhere. They actually ring a bell, and Matt Hardy hits Sammy Guevara with a garbage can. And then we start getting a little bit of commentary. We hear Excalibur doing a little bit of commentary. They're brawling back and forth. Matt Hardy gets the... I had to write this down so I got the word right. The Scepter of Memphistopheles. Did I say that right? Memphistopheles. I think that was supposed to be for Memphis. Memphistopheles. So they have their brawl. And he powerbombs Sammy Guevara, you know, through a table. And then Santana and Ortiz show up. Matt Hardy calls for help. Private Party shows up. They're brawling. And again, when I say this is like the greatest hits, you know, we needed like Roman candle spots. These were better than the Roman candles because it shot like a lot of jumping jacks, some firecrackers. It was really, really nice. And it was funny because Matt Hardy is shooting it up in the air, not at anybody in particular. It's lighting up the sky, smoke everywhere. Somehow Guevara gets one. They're not really aiming at each other, but then at one point, obviously there was a lot of spots recorded individually and spliced together. But you then see Matt Hardy chasing after Sammy Guevara. At one point, Sammy Guevara falls, I guess, in mud. And Matt Hardy with the little subliminal joke, you know, this is not a mud show. And he's got, you know, like the Roman candle right on Guevara. And I think one time the jumping jack hit him in the nuts, which was pretty funny. But then, you know, what ends up happening is Sammy Guevara, you know, tries to, they basically try to throw Sammy Guevara into the Lake of Reincarnation, I guess. And Matt Hardy is unable to, and he gets sidetracked. Next thing we know, we see Hurricane Helms, and there's somebody under a mask with a black leather overcoat, disguising his voice, telling Matt Hardy not to do it. This is that he pulls the mask off, and I need to pull it up. He reveals it to be none other than Gangrel. All right. You know, Gangrel, you know, looking good. He still works indies. You know, we see banners with him on shows all the time. But Gangrel is basically threatening to do something to Hurricane Helms if Matt Hardy doesn't let Sammy Guevara go. And, you know, for the podcasters and websites out there, especially the older ones that, you know, claim that they watched Attitude Era, they had no clue. That the Hardys were originally with Gangrel when they were the New Brood. So, you know, maybe once in a while, guys and gals, maybe you do a Google search of Gangrel's history with Matt Hardy before just immediately trying to get tweet fucked, you know, and a little tweet job. Was that how you do it? Tweet job? You know, like, because it was both guys and gals doing it. You know, like, why is Gangrel there? That doesn't make any sense. Fucking Gangrel, you might as well just brought Virgil while you're at it. Yeah. They didn't even, like, hear what Gangrel was saying. So, anyway, they get the upper hand. Little comedy segment between Hurricane Helms and Matt Hardy. See, I can't stand idiots. And, you know, basically Hurricane Helms is like, what took you so long? You know, it's been 2 years. What took you so long? And Matt Hardy's like, well, you know, there's storylines and this and that. I mean, it was pretty funny, their interaction. But we get Hurricane Helms gets thrown into the Lake of Reincarnation twice. First time he gets thrown in and he comes back as Detective Helms. you know, and he's trying to get the scoop from Sammy Guevara, and Sammy Guevara throws him back in the water. And Sammy Guevara even made a quote. I wrote it down. Oh, man, what did he say? Oh, yeah. He said, what's a hero to a god because of, you know, Hurricane Helms was trying to get a little bit of a scoop from him, and he was talking about himself being a Spanish god. Hurricane Helms gets thrown in, and when he comes back, he's back to Hurricane Helms again. We get a lot of brawling between Santana and Ortiz and Private Party. Gangrel would brawl a little bit with Hurricane Helms, but ultimately it would go to that warehouse, the Dome of Deletion, you know, and basically Neo shut the door so nobody could get in. It's just Matt Hardy, Sammy Guevara, and the referee. And you see there's a casket in the background, the piano's in the background, there's a couple of tables, there's a 10, 12-foot ladder in the ring. Sammy Guevara gets the upper hand for a little bit, actually climbs the top of the ladder and does a swanton onto Matt Hardy through a table, which looked really, really nice. There was a couple other points where Sammy Guevara removed the ropes from the ring. One time he was using it to choke out Matt Hardy. There was another time where he had it raked across his face. And, you know, ultimately Matt Hardy would get the upper hand. And Matt Hardy, at one point, put Sammy Guevara through a table. Then there was another spot. You didn't see the actual bump because obviously that's where they were going to put a little bit of special effects and, you know, a little bit of prop. And, you know, they showed it after the fact. But we were led to believe that Matt Hardy put Sammy Guevara through a table outside the ring. And I don't think it was a dig, Sam, because they wanted you to see Sammy Guevara lift his head and there was a pool of blood there. I mean, they went a little bit overboard even with the blood, I think. They made it seem like blood was coming from his mouth, blood with the back of the head. And what this was basically similar to what happened in their feud leading up to this. Because there was another point, I'll tell you, as far as visual, this was freaking awesome. Matt Hardy takes the edge of the chair sideways. Remember when Sammy Guevara threw that chair and he picked up the wrong chair and he hit Matt Hardy in the face and busted him open with stitches and everything? Matt Hardy took a regular chair and did the same thing to Sammy Guevara. And they had a side camera angle showing the replay later on. I'm like, wow, that was beautifully done. The visual was outstanding. But basically, you had Sammy Guevara outside the ring. His head, look, they're trying to play off a split open. He's bleeding from the mouth. And Matt Hardy basically puts him out of his misery and pretty much does a concerto. Knocks him out. Then Private Party, you know, the garage opens up or whatever. Private Party comes in. They have a garbage pail. And they put Sammy Guevara into the garbage pail. You know, head down, feet up, close the pail. They have a pickup truck outside, and Matt Hardy tells, and I wrote it down so I got the phrase exactly. He tells the driver, he says, Señor Benjamin, take this obsolete rubbish away. And you see Señor Benjamin for a little bit. Funny thing is, if you go back, Hurricane Helms, Gangrel, the fireworks, and Señor Benjamin, you could hear an audible pop from the crowd in the background. So they enjoyed it. And he drives away, and Guevara's in the garbage pail in the back of the truck, and you see the Private Party, Matt Hardy, and Rebbe Hardy, and Hurricane Helms, all celebrating in front of the building. Fireworks are going off, and that goes off. No, it was not a turn. It was not a turn. It was a very fun match. You know, Matt Hardy on social media today, you know, basically saying, you know, that this is over and that's it. That, you know, when we see Sammy again, it's going to be a whole different Sammy. I don't know if that happens. He's still part of the Inner Circle. So something is going to go down. I just don't know how they bring him back onto TV. But look, it was fun. again, it's not the best cinematic match. This felt like greatest hits. Make sure you have a couple of, you know, reincarnations in there, a little bit of fireworks, the ring, the warehouse, this. It was nothing wrong with it. I enjoyed it very much. And this leads to two final matches tonight. We had Chris Jericho taking on MJF. And if MJF wins, not only is he part of the Inner Circle, but Wardlow is as well. And it was interesting because on the pre-show, the buy-in, they did an interview segment with MJF and Wardlow was asked, like, are you in the Inner Circle if MJF wins? And MJF basically interrupted. So they kind of left you hanging, like wondering if Wardlow would end up being put in the Inner Circle. Now, you could already see some of the friction. You're going to see Wardlow and Jake Hager, dirty looks all the time, angered at each other all the time. Sammy Guevara, they got to put him back on TV fast because you got to have a little bit of dirty looks with Sammy Guevara and MJF. You know, yeah, it seems like ultimately there's going to be a power struggle and somebody's going to get kicked out or there might be a setup. We'll see where it goes. One thing is for certain, before that happens, you're going to get a hell of a lot of comedic segments on TV. But this match tonight, I think we would all agree, a little bit more gaga than anything else. But there was a couple of moments in the match that were really, really good. First off, you know, seeing Chris Jericho still do the Lion Salt is always good. But seeing him do the Frankensteiner off the top rope was fucking phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. There was another point, they were outside the ring, and once again, cameraman Jericho returns. Chris Jericho grabs one of the cameras at ringside and, you know, he picks up the camera and he's giving MJF a middle finger. So, you know, a little bit of comedy mixed in as well. Jericho was the baby face, clear cut baby face, which he's been for a while now, let's be honest. But, you know, the match, you know, it was fine. It had its moments. You know, it was one point where Jericho tried to hit the cold breaker, but MJF turned it into the salt of the earth. And, you know, that he didn't win from that, but, you know, there was a couple of good reversals going on. But the end of the match had Wardlow bringing in the ring. The ring! The ring! The ring! He brought in the ring, and MJF puts the ring on, and then Jake Hager is there. Jake Hager gives Jericho Floyd the bat, and MJF does an Eddie Guerrero. MJF, you know, lays out on the ring. Jericho's got Floyd in his hand. Aubrey Edwards turns around, and she thinks that Jericho laid out MJF. And now, you know, you're wondering, oh, fuck, they're going to do the DQ finish? Nobody wants to see a DQ finish. But instead, because Jericho was busy with Aubrey Edwards, that's when Wardlow gives MJF the ring. And MJF, you know, Jericho gets distracted and MJF rolls him up and gets a win. So, yeah, Sam, they're going to be a tag team. You're going to see some more comedy with the tag. You could definitely see Jericho and Hager versus MJF and Wardlow. In fact, I wonder if they would go to the extent to where the winning team is the leaders of the Inner Circle. I don't know if they would do something like that because I don't think Hager or Wardlow would ever be looked like that. But I could see a tag team match between those four with some type of stipulation on the line. But, you know, the match was fine. I mean, you know, Jericho, you know, putting over another young guy once again. He did a lot for Orange Cassidy, and he's doing some for MJF right now, and it's fine. The match is over. You have four guys in the ring that I just said. The crowd is chanting Inner Circle. And, you know, that's basically how we go off. There was one point where MJF holds the rope open for Jericho to leave, and he looks at the camera, and he's like, and it was similar to Eddie Kingston a while ago when he was making sure the family stuck together and he looked in the camera and he winked. It was pretty much, I don't think you need to read into that all that much. Yeah, Ken, it was similar to when Rock gave the bird to Austin. Yeah, Jericho's tinging the camera before. So this is not the first time. But it was a fun match. You know, again, this is going to lead to a lot of comedy segments, without a doubt. You know, this storyline will probably go for about 2 months and probably lead to the next pay-per-view. So we'll see where it goes from here to there. And this is when we find out that the next pay-per-view for AEW is Revolution on February 27th. A backstage segment that obviously they were looking to fill some time. I don't know why. You know, maybe this should give everybody a couple of seconds break because of the Jericho-MJF match, but they do a backstage segment where Orange Cassidy and Best Friends are being interviewed, and here comes Miro, Kip Sabian, and Penelope Ford. And Kip Sabian is demanding an apology from Orange Cassidy because the week earlier, Penelope Ford almost, you know, got injured with that whole segment and everything. And like under his breath, I'm sorry. And it was just like pointless. I mean, you know, it felt like filler, but you got a beautiful montage vignette leading up to the main event. Play that. I don't know what was the purpose of that whatsoever, but they did, and it is what it is. So now we get the main event tonight. Eddie Kingston in an I Quit match against Jon Moxley for the AEW heavyweight title. Muhammad is looking at my clip and saying, why do I have 7 thumbs down? Muhammad, there are some very bitter people in podcasting land that absolutely despise the fact that I am here with all of you, that I am branched out to video and doing shows and getting, you know, pretty nice attention. There's a couple of people who are doing shows on YouTube that, you know, wish me well to my face and write some pretty nasty DMs to people behind my back, some of them that I have seen. And, you know, only because I give those people my bond that I would never out them unless they told me it was okay. You know, there's a lot of bitter jealousy out there. I don't think about it. You know what? Muhammad is tuning in right now live. He's in Sweden, and it's 7:30 in the morning. And honestly, Muhammad, this is why I do it. People like you, that, because honestly, I don't even think porn could get me up in the wee hours in the morning, you know? So the fact that you all are nice enough to tune in and enjoy this and give me support, I'm telling you, it's like caffeine. I mean, it really gives me a nice jolt, and it really makes me realize that this is done for the right reason. So trust me, much love. And, you know, there's some people out there that are just bitter. And, you know, there's an old saying that, you know, 33% of the people that you meet publicly or not, 33% of them are going to like you, 33% are not going to like you, and 33% are not going to give a shit. You know, so it is what it is. Doesn't bother me. Honestly, like I tell everybody out there, no matter who you are, whether you do podcasts or you're just regular social media, you know, the ultimate this to people out there is success and happiness, because you see some people's social media accounts, just scroll their wall for a week and count how many posts are positive and how many posts are negative. And you realize that there are some very, 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 very bitter bitches out there. Not interested, be honest with you. So, main event time, you have Eddie Kingston versus Moxley. Oh, Muhammad, the haters are going to love this. They're going to love this. You know, this was not on the level of Omega and Moxley from last year. Or I don't know, was it early this year? I don't remember when it was, but when people were writing on the computer, you know, just about some of the spots, even though there was stunt props being used. But this was very physical, had emotion in it, used a couple of props that worked very well, much more toned down compared to Omega and Moxley. But you know, this was, you know, it told a wonderful story. There was some barbed wire used. There was one point where Moxley used a barbed wire bat on Eddie Kingston on his midsection. Eddie Kingston selling it beautifully, coughing, and, you know, people actually starting to think that maybe something is wrong with Eddie Kingston. No, he's just selling it well. Eddie gets the upper hand, trying to be a little bit creative with barbed wire. One point wrapping it around his fist. But the spot that I love, and yeah, haters are going to hate this, but I brought it up not because of anything, but just to tell you why I love spots like this. But, you know, I have pictures I want to share with you. A lot of you have seen them already. But one point, you had Eddie Kingston take out a bag of thumbtacks, real thumbtacks. And he drops Moxley onto the thumbtacks. The thumbtacks are in his hand, in his hand. It's in his head, his back, this and that. And, you know, like I had flashbacks to when I had that brawl with Louis in USA Pro Wrestling. So one of the things that I did back in the day that people still talk about to this day, and I'm going to show it to you now, and I don't care if haters hate it, but there was one point where Louis was split open. His face was bleeding. And when you really want to get revenge on someone, you know, busting someone open is not enough. You need to take it to the next level. So the one thing that I loved about doing stuff for Frank, even though I was horrible at doing it, was he let you be as creative as you wanted to be. So when I was doing this stuff with Louis, you know, we were throwing ideas back and forth at each other. You see on my YouTube channel, Louis's the one that told me to staple his ass, the contract. When I stapled his ass and then shoved the pen up his ass and then threw the pen into the crowd, that pen literally was inside his asshole. And people just jumped out of the way because they didn't want a shit-smelling pen hit them. But when we did this and he was busted open, I said, you know, wouldn't it be an awesome visual if I put Comet on your face? So we went to the store and we bought a thing of Comet. And this guy is bleeding. And tell me what burns more than an open wound? A thing of Comet. So I put the Comet on his face. That's another shot of it. And come on, man, that's a visual. You got blood in an open wound. You put Comet cleanser on an open wound? That's painful. So, well, in the end, as you will see, in the end, I got a chair bashed over my head. And as you will see, I get a bottle broken over my head. And those are the thumbtacks that were, this was a half an hour after the match. And I don't have the picture offhand with the thumbtacks in my head, but I had about 30 thumbtacks in my head. I am in my back, in my hands, and it was the greatest feeling in the world. I can't describe it, but when you do stuff like that, it's an adrenaline rush that you don't understand. It's just awesome. So tonight, when they're having their brawl, and Jon Moxley has the open wounds from the thumbtacks, in storyline, Eddie Kingston takes it to a whole new level. He grabs a bottle of rubbing alcohol. Now, I invite all of you out there. You get a paper cut, don't put peroxide on, put rubbing alcohol on it. See how it feels. Yeah, King of the Deathmatch. Yeah, no. I sucked, George. Horrendous. But I loved the creativity. I loved being able to be creative. And, you know, I loved it, man. Louis's fucking awesome man. That guy is awesome. But, you know, Eddie Kingston gets a bottle of rubbing alcohol. He dumps it on Moxley's back. Now, realistically, that was a bottle of water. It was not rubbing alcohol. And, you know, for various reasons, it's not just getting alcohol. If water and alcohol look the same, we can't smell it through the TV. Why would you even want to use alcohol? First of all, the rubbing alcohol would have ruined their outfits, would have ruined the ring. You know, I invite you, pour a bottle of rubbing alcohol on your clothes and you see what happens in 10, 15 minutes, you know. But I absolutely, absolutely loved the match. It was very psychological. You know, towards the end of the match, you had Moxley take the barbed wire, put it on his hand, and he wraps it and puts like a choke. And I even think he put the barbed wire on his arm and did a choke onto Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston had nowhere to go. They were not going to do what they did the last two times without Eddie Kingston. They weren't going to just make him pass out where he says, I didn't give in. This had to come to a conclusion. And Eddie Kingston ended up saying, I quit. And the match was over. But the whole match, it told the story it needed to tell. And what I love the most about this match, as I said in the beginning of the night, you know, Eddie Kingston, maybe I'm gushing a little bit, but the only reason why I am is not just because he's from our neck of the woods and I got to enjoy his stuff for 15 years. But what I loved about it the most is this guy does not look like your quintessential, your average main eventer for a top wrestling promotion. Maybe a manager at best, or maybe on the undercard. But to see a guy like this not only leave NWA and show up in AEW, when he first came in, nobody thought, where is this guy going to fit in? Then you're like, okay, manager. But does that make sense? He's with the Butcher and the Blade and, you know, Penta and Rey Fénix. Then they kind of tell a story about being up and down the road together in this snap. But still, we all felt like, okay, Eddie Kingston, Santana, Ortiz, Diamante. All right, we want to see that, you know. So you really did not know where Eddie Kingston was going to fall in. But the fact that AEW trusted Moxley and Kingston enough, and I guarantee you, some interview down the line, you're going to find out that Moxley had a lot of pull in getting Kingston in this main event feud. And I think you're going to find out later on that Moxley had a lot of say in pushing for this, or maybe pushed for this. And the fact that AEW allowed it, trusted it, and let it develop. I said it Wednesday. Yes, it's two totally different storylines. But I am enjoying Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley more than I'm enjoying Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. And that is not a knock on Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. Both of them are knocking it out of the park. But as far as the heat, the storyline, the tension, you know, it feels a lot of reality in that. And it does with Roman Reigns and Jey Uso as well. But the top of the whole thing is, you must call me Tribal Chief. I am the Tribal Chief. You must call me Tribal Chief. Why won't you call me Tribal Chief? Just say it. I'm a Tribal Chief. Call me a Tribal Chief. I am the Tribal Chief. I am the Tribal Chief. You know, I don't remember when he was the big dog. I don't remember him telling people, even as a babyface, call me the big dog. I'm the big dog. I am the big dog. This is my yard. I am the big dog. Just say it. So, but in WWE, it fits perfectly because WWE is more of, you know, it's more of character driven. AEW, it's more emotional driven. And that's why I am not knocking the Roman Reigns storyline at all. They are killing it. But this is more emotion driven. And when you can emotionally get into a feud or a match, you enjoy it that much more. And again, you know, no disrespect for the people out there that get uncomfortable when you see a little bit of blood or some weapons. You should, please, just don't watch wrestling anymore. I'm serious. I mean, it's just, wrestling has always been violent. There's always been blood. There's always been brawls. You know, some of what you see is props. And, you know, I don't see people, like I said at the beginning of the show, when Halloween, they're talking about, oh, did you see Jason versus Freddy, Jason versus Godzilla, Jason fucks Freddy. I mean, all his gory films, and they're all oohing and ahhing over it and talking about it, and you see a little blob boy, I don't feel comfortable right now. Why do you have to use thumbtacks? Why do we need the deathmatch garbage? You know, there's just very weird fucking people out there, man. This pay-per-view, from top to bottom, was stacked. Easily, some of the outcomes on some of the other pay-per-views I've enjoyed more. The Stadium Stampede is still my favorite AEW moment of 2020. Some matches I enjoyed more, but I just loved that. But as far as top to bottom on a pay-per-view lineup for AEW, I thought tonight's was the strongest. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I give this pay-per-view, under COVID conditions, I give it a 9.5. And you know me. Look, when I was saying earlier about Meltzer and Alvarez, I have no issues whatsoever if they get paid from AEW or don't. But I did see that Brian Alvarez said that the finish of the Young Bucks FTR match was the greatest finish in history. Now, I politely disagree. But, you know, it is what it is. And how many times in WWE do we hear, this is going to be the greatest match in history, the greatest rivalry in history, the greatest WrestleMania in history, the greatest champion in history, the greatest this. Everybody does it. They just do it in different ways. I don't remember the last time I gave a pay-per-view a 9.5. I don't think I'll ever give a pay-per-view a 10. I don't think I'll ever. I mean, funny thing is, like Heatwave 98, because I was doing wrestling hotlines then, I was doing a hotline since 97. Heatwave 98 might have been one of the only pay-per-views where I think I gave it a 9.5 or a 10. Because I just watched it from start to finish. And I watched it over and over, start to finish. There was never a dull moment the entire night. Not all the matches were great, but ECW's Heatwave 98 was as close as that gets. The NXT takeover that we just had was phenomenal. From beginning to end, I think I gave that a 9. So I give it a 9.5. There wasn't a bad match tonight, really. You really think about it, there really wasn't, you know. But if you're going to force me to, probably my least favorite match was Hikaru Shida versus Nyla Rose. It would have been Orange Cassidy versus John Silver, but they really turned it up a notch. So I really can't give him any critique there. My favorite match of the night, I tell you, if the Young Bucks and FTR would have ended 5 minutes earlier, I probably would have leaned towards them. If Kenny Omega and Hangman Page would have went 5-10 minutes more, I would have gave it to them. So I tell you, Moxley versus Kingston, I loved because of the story that it told. But I tell you, this is kind of, you know what? I'm going to go with Moxley versus Kingston because they didn't do spots. And I you know why I'm convinced now why I go with that match? They didn't do spots to do spots, if people understand what I mean. Like, sometimes you bring a table in a match, and you're only doing it for a table spot. Like, it's a spot that was pointless during a match. It's always cool to see a table spot, but sometimes people do spots just to do spots. Matt Jackson earlier decides he's going to go off the top rope and do a big flip to break up a two count. I brought up Morrison last week. Morrison, in the handicap match with Drew McIntyre versus Miz and Morrison, Morrison does a backflip to break up a two count, you know, three count. And it's like, some people do spots just to do spots. Every spot that was done in Moxley Kingston told a story. You know, you want to hurt your opponent. You want to try to get him to say you quit. You put the thumbtacks to give more pain. And then you add wood to the fire by pouring rubbing alcohol. And then you use the barbed wire and use it in very creative ways. But you don't use it just as a visual. You use it to enhance the pain. So that's why I give it to Moxley versus Kingston. Even the pre-show, Serena Deeb and Allison Kay, did a wonderful job. You know, I'm going to remain concerned about NWA. Something's got to happen soon. Would I say they're on life support? No, but I will say this. If we want to leave this pay-per-view recap with a little positive note about NWA, NAEW, if NWA can bounce back from this, let's hope that AEW, Ring of Honor, and a couple of other feds throw them a little bone here and there. And what I mean by that is we need to see a couple of AEW people show up at an NWA event. We need to see a Ring of Honor person show up at an NWA event. And I think that'll happen. I think you might see Hikaru Shida show up at an NWA event. You might see someone else from AEW that you would never expect to show up at an NWA event. So, you know, right now, AEW is very, very smart. You know, they're not embarrassed to have other promotions being mentioned during the show. WWE is the opposite. WWE used to be petrified, and they still are for the most part. You start mentioning other companies out there, and people start getting curious. Hey, I never saw this. Ah, look at this. This is fuck WWE. Look at this shit. I'm going there. You know, even like the promotions look small, like Evolve and others. You really never ever heard them mention them. You know, but when they want to do best of footages for people that used to be there, you know, then they mention it. And even when they mention it, they make it sound like, oh, when they were there, they were just, you know, beginning their career. But now they're in WWE, and now they have this career. So they always downplay people's work elsewhere. So, but anyway, thank you for the kind words, Danger Ross. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. In the comments section, I'd love to read, you know, what you thought of tonight's pay-per-view. Let me know what was your favorite match, least favorite match. Anything specific during some of the matches. You know, remember, not only am I reading your comments, but your fellow friends that are tuning in also are reading it. So probably spark up a little bit of conversation, some debate, agreement, disagreement. Don't forget, Sunday, I am going to record the Q&A from 2 weeks ago. Yes, provided my voice is fine tomorrow, I'll do it. I'm going to pre-record it. It's not going to be live, because I don't know exactly what time I'm going to do it yet tomorrow. But so that should be online for everybody tomorrow night. And now since we're doing it every 2 weeks, that show will definitely be shorter than the last. Because every 2 weeks, it keeps the questions a lot fresher. And thus, shows could be a lot shorter. So first one was fun. So tomorrow I'll do the next one. And I'm out of here. So everyone, before you go, if you enjoyed the episode, give it a thumbs up on the YouTube page. If you didn't like it for any reason, give it a thumbs down. I totally respect that. If you are not subscribed to this channel yet, subscribe. This way, when I do put up episodes or even the Q&A tomorrow, you'll be alerted right away when the show pops up. You'll see it on your feed. And that's pretty much it. So, wow. Oh, my God. What do I mean, wow? 1:50 in the morning? Oh, doesn't feel it. AEW needs to start their shows at 7 from now on instead of 8. Because if I'm still doing this now, there's probably some other podcasters still doing this now as well. So, my God, I thought it was like midnight. I know when you add up the time, it doesn't make sense, but I didn't even realize. Like, I still have this burst of energy, and I need to get some sleep. So everyone, much love as always. Thank you for the support. And I will catch you all again Sunday for the Q&A. And Monday, Mish, I think he has all his equipment set up. He moved back to Illinois over the past week. He had some computer problems, some equipment problems. So I know he was working on that. So if he's got everything set up, and I'm pretty sure he does, he will join me on Monday, so we'll definitely talk about anything that's going on. But much love, everyone. I'll catch you all again very, very soon. Be safe, everybody. Have a good night. And I'm so happy we didn't talk politics. No politics tonight. Good night, everybody.